21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
My shoes are worn out, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Kortner. And our engineer is Noah Dankner. But joining us halfway through this first hour will be Dr. Rick Strassman, M.D., on the parallels between Hebrew prophecy and his experiments with the brain chemical DMT. So stay tuned for that. But first, a special treat. We have a 25-minute interview with Sir Richard Taylor, the founder and creative director of the New Zealand prop and special effects company Weta Workshop. He and his team were in charge of costume design, armor, weapons, creatures, miniatures, prosthetics, and special makeup for the Lord of the Rings film series and the Hobbit film series, as well as a host of other blockbusters produced between and since them. Sir Richard Taylor is famous for the incredible attention to detail that goes into all their props and for showcasing the artistry and creativity of New Zealanders. A close friend of Peter Jackson, Taylor and his company shared in winning 5 Academy Awards and dozens of other awards around the world. I thought this new movie, The Hobbit, Battle of 5 Armies, was great. Even though I was left melancholy at the end, this being the final installment from this particular team of this particular story. I recommend it highly, and you should see it now while it's still in the theaters. In addition to The Hobbit, we'll also ask Richard about his new children's television show called The Thunderbirds Are Go, which I'm especially excited to see, because the die-cast model of my Woodstock bus is going to make a cameo appearance in one episode. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Sir Richard Taylor.
Hello there, Bob. Lovely to be here with you again.
Yeah, you got that right. I know this won't surprise you, but I got to say it for the record. I love this new film, Hobbit 3. Thank you for maintaining the high-quality standards of production that you guys started over 15 years ago. I've known you for 15 years. This is amazing. What do you think about this film?
I loved the third film. I am very, very proud of the work we've done. I can't tell you, Bob, at the beginning, the overwhelming concern that for all the fans of the literature that you may, you know, you may not do the best job, but you endeavor to do so, and the sense of relief. Now we've got to the end of the third one of the second trilogy. It's actually 16 years now since we started, that we actually did an okay job and that we've been the custodians of the visual images for this length of time, and we can send it out into the world basically as good as we could possibly do it. It may not be as good as it could have been done in the world, but it's definitely as good as a bunch of Kiwis could have done it, and that's something we're very proud of.
Well, you should be, because, you know, you're being very modest. You're being very modest, Richard, but that's your nature. One of the things that I find remarkable about your journey is how much your success is based on friendships and strong relationships. There are a lot of parallels there between your team in New Zealand and the good qualities of Tolkien's kind-hearted hobbits. You knew Peter Jackson before The Lord of the Rings, is that right?
Yeah, we met 23 years ago, and he just wandered into our workshop, having discovered that there's like-minded people in Wellington doing cool stuff just like him. He was still making puppets in his baking them in his mum's kitchen stove, and we were working in our bedroom making smelly rubber latex puppets in the back of our bedroom, so We bonded over chemical smells and puppetry, so it doesn't get better than that. And that friendship has lasted the longest time. You know, we're extraordinarily fortunate that we get to work with someone so visionary and so gracious and so inspirational as Peter Jackson.
Well, I know you and your partner, Tanya Roger, founded Weta Workshop in 1987, according to Wikipedia, if we got that right. But I imagine your staff and your facilities necessarily expanded a great deal to take on the production of Lord of the Rings. Am I right, or am I off base here?
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, it all started with a phone call from Peter Jackson saying, hey, Richard, you better get over to my house. We've been working on King Kong, and sadly it fell over 6 months in. We went back to working on Hercules and Xena. He said, you better get over, bring the boys being our design staff at the time, grab some fish and chips, main staple diet of all New Zealanders, and we better have a chat. We went over there and he told us what we're up to. We went on. You teeter at the edge of a precipice. You know, you've got the option of stepping back from that edge, or you go into free fall. You literally have got to take the leap and hope to arrest the fall, get your wits about you, get the team around you. At the beginning of the project, only 38 of our staff had ever worked on a film or TV show before, 158 staff in total. So one-eighth of our staff had any knowledge or experience in what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We went on and produced 48,000 separate items for the first three films of the trilogy all those years ago. The average age of our staff was 22 years old. So, you know, if I get asked often, what's your favourite thing about the Lord of the Rings experience? And it was simply the fact that we were able to empower a group of young people above their own expectation to achieve something extraordinary. And that will always stay with me, that you know, that group, that family, that the journeymen and women that came along with us were able to muster such an extraordinary level of capability in such a short length of time.
Well, I really wondered for years, how did you maintain quality control over a small army, well, it got to be a large army later, of creative people? And in particular, how did you keep the vibe of the family of comrades or friends that seemed so, well, to pervade your workspace? Did you have something like weekly meetings or monthly company picnics or hot dogs on the rocks or whatever?
No, well, you know, like all things, you lead by example. I'm on the workshop floor for maybe 8 of every 10 hours a day. You must be the last one to leave no matter what the deadline. You hire an amazing group of people that are self-inspiring and don't need to be led too much because they're so desiring of achievement themselves. And I have a description: if you're asked as a group to weave a tapestry, no matter how fine and how pale your thread may be, if you don't do it with the greatest amount of effort and energy, the tapestry in some way will be threadbare. So right down to the youngest person with the smallest task, you've got to empower them to achieve the task at the utmost skill. They've got to achieve the threading of that tapestry to the utmost care and ability. And if you can inspire that in someone, they grow in pride as they see their work fulfilling their own expectation and then the people around them. Also, of course, we were working on Tolkien. We were realizing the literature of Tolkien, and that in its own sense is an immense inspiration. And you would have to be a very faltered individual if that alone wasn't a primary motivation that didn't drive you forward in the desire to pay homage to the written word and deliver something worthy of the beautiful literature that he gave the world.
Well, is there something about being a relatively isolated island nation that makes the talents of New Zealanders so helpful to work on these films? It seems you have a lot of people who can do a lot of different tasks and do them well.
Yeah, Bob, it's really lovely you acknowledge that. We've had the great fortune of being nominated 6 times for an Academy Award. We've won 5 times. That's an incredible achievement for our team, especially coming from this little island nation. But the true story in those Oscars is not the number necessarily, it's the incredibly broad range that we've won them for. The same group of people that work with me every day have won Oscars for makeup, for costume, and for visual effects. Mm-hmm. We actually hold a Guinness Book of Records of all things because of that achievement for such a broad spectrum of work. And It's because what I call the Jack and Jill of all trades mentality of New Zealand. The reason I use Jill is because we have 50% of our staff are women, which is very unusual for an effects workshop. But those men and women coming from New Zealand have an extraordinary ability to work across a non-specific, non-specialist roles, but rather cover a broad array of different things. It's that attitude that you'll just give it a go. There's no formal training these people bring to our workshop. They've all mostly trained on the workshop floor, but they've trained across such a large and disparate collection of different disciplines. And I'll mention there's one other element to it. I think I've mentioned that I've taken a wonderful quote and given it my own spin. Douglas Adams, one of the great authors of the world and one of the most quotable authors, wrote, "The art of flying is to throw yourself at the ground and miss."
Beautiful quote. Oh, wow. That's
and
a good one.
I've done a derivation of that, which is the art of innovation is to throw yourself at failure and miss. Why does the whole world not innovate? We've all got big enough brains. We've all got the capacity. Because we've been educated into a fear of punishment if failing.
That's correct.
If I fail at my exams, we're going to be punished. If I fail at my business endeavors, the corporate country rules will punish me. In New Zealand, there is still a culture that you can risk failure in the pursuit of innovative thought and not be punished if you should trip. And that's at the heart of the culture in this country.
But almost as amazing is the transformation your crew has had to make in technology. Back in 2000, at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, you made much of your props and effects by hand. Since then, technology has advanced so far that for today's movies, you are using robots, 3D printing, laser technology to do much of what you used to do by hand. I don't even understand what 3D printing is, much less on how you could use it to build your props. But what is astonishing to me is that you are working with the same people, but the work has entirely changed. Tell us about this new style of work and how your crew's adapted to it.
Yeah, you've absolutely got it in one. It's fascinating. On Lord of the Rings, everything we made was 100% hand-built, every single thing. Today, 60% of everything we make is built through robotic manufacturing. Laser cutters, plasma cutters, 3D printers, CNC mills, 7-axis milling machines. The really cool part of it is that almost all of that equipment is actually being built in the workshop.
Oh.
A big issue for us is that we can't necessarily afford the equipment to purchase it and import it from around the world. So five of our 3D printers, one of them that can almost print a full human being, such as its scale, has been built totally within the workshop.
Wow.
All of our milling machines, bar one, has been built totally in the workshop. Wow. So what's lovely there is when we work on a movie like Elysium or Neil Blomkamp's new movie that's coming out, where we're building robots for the movie in the form of droids, we're building robots on machines that are robots that are built by our staff. So robots building robots, which is really cool. You know, most people come in here and see this equipment and scratch their heads and go, well, how on earth could you even begin to think that you could build a 3D printer? Of course, it's just someone had to in the world, and if a big company can build them, then a little company can build them, and it's just a linear process of thought and doing. Most of our equipment has been built by very young people that just have that inspiration to give it a go. All of our team have had to adapt to this technology. The great thing is that the robotic manufacturing hasn't put a single person out of work. It's actually increased our capacity to do work, and therefore it keeps people employed and gives them the really fun handcraft side of things to do still, while the robots do a great deal of the dross work.
Well, Peter Jackson has become famous for his epic battle scenes, and this final one had, well, it's outdone them all. Were you pleased with the way the five armies came together in the battle scenes?
extraordinarily pleased. We designed on that battle scene, on the battles for over 4 years, trying to hone the look and the signature of each of those characters and the iconic recognition of each of the armies. If you think about what that battle is, I can't think of another battle in film that is more epic. There has been larger battles, of course, in films, arguably, but if you consider the complexity of the species, the different races, the terrain, the different strategies that are at play, the fact that even a transforming bear is thrown into the giant eagles, bats, and so on and so on. It is an extraordinarily complex thing to storytell over an hour of a movie. But as I've said to you once before, Bob, it plays to the very heart of Peter Jackson's film directorial genius. In the epic, he continues to bring you back to the intimate.
Yes,
he does. That's why the blockbusters that are made by him, I believe, continue to resonate. You get all of the incredible eye candy that you may get with any great blockbuster, but you also get an intimate, almost art house-like storyline with the love, the affection, the jealousies, the complexities of human emotion at the very core of these epic moments. And that makes for extraordinary movie viewing, in my view.
Were you consulted on the script at all? I know the purists could be up in arms, but I am emphatic about really loving the addition of strong female characters. That was real problem with my dear friend J.R.R. Tolkien. Tell us everything you can about the thinking and planning that went into this important change. Who contributed the most to fleshing out the female leads, both in The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings? Was it Peter Jackson, Philippa Bowens, Fran Walsh, yourself, or was it me? Did I do it for you?
You know, these are movies for a 21st century, and the world has moved a very long way in the last 50 to 60 years from when the writings of this learned professor at an Oxford university in England wrote these books, where the world had a very different mindset to the necessity and importance of giving equality and power to both genders in our society. Of course, today, to make a movie of this magnitude and not weave into it powerful female characters that play a pivotal role in the ongoing advancement of the cultures of this world would be highly inappropriate. But to do it gratuitously and to do it in a gauche way would be also a travesty to the writings of Tolkien.
That's a fine line.
But of course, that's not at all what's happened. The thoughtfulness and care and diligence and credibility that's been given to those strong female roles by Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens, and of course Peter, is extraordinary. And I would find the films so lacking if we didn't have access to the Toriels and the Galadriels and the Arwens of this world. They obviously bring a feminine beauty, they bring a richness, but they also bring an immense power and sense of purpose and complexity to the world, which I think is critical and so beautifully done. And it's just a tribute to that writing team. Yeah. That they had the skill and the ability and vision to weave that into the story.
Well, I think that in the long run, in the years, decades, maybe a century to come, that's one of the things that's going to be talked about a lot, that you guys stood up for something so important. And certainly you knew that there were others out there that were thinking, my gosh, I want to hear only what J.R.R. Tolkien wrote. Well, I've lived with Tolkien for like 50 years, and I was ready. I was ready for this particular change. It meant a lot to me. Have there been any talks of future spin-offs or sequels based on other Tolkien writings, or even new films with brand new plot lines devised by other writers based on these characters? Or are you confident that this is the final Peter Jackson / Weta / Tolkien production?
There has been no talk externally. The rights complex. These are very, very complex, but then we never thought we'd get to make The Hobbit. And look how wonderful the important people were able to put their heads together and make it happen for us all, as audience members and as people working on it. Bob, I honestly don't think so. I don't think there is, you know, Pete's got an incredible suite of other ideas that he wants to share with the world, and that must be motivating him highly. That's not to say that there may not be in the future, I guess, some group somewhere in the world may do something. But, of course, we ourselves internally in the workshop talk a great deal about how much we would love to go back to Middle Earth. It's occupied over half of our professional careers. Mm-hmm. It's made friendships. It's taken us on an odyssey on par with the Fellowship in many ways. Those people are still with us. It's the greatest thing that we could have ever have dreamed of working on, and it's extremely mixed emotions having to separate from that universe now and get on. You know, since we finished our part of The Hobbit, because, of course, our work finishes at the end of Pickups, we've worked on another 11 movies, and we've enjoyed every single one of them. Very special place.
Before we run out of time, and I know we don't have much time left here, I really want to hear you tell us more about your Thunderbirds Are Go project, mainly because I'm biased here, because the possibility of the Woodstock bus model will play a small part in that. I miss this TV show when it was on the air in the 60s. Would you please describe it for our listeners and what your relaunch of this cult classic, how it might differ?
Very good. Well, I was actually born in the UK, and I immigrated with my family to New Zealand when I was four. And the Thunderbirds was the primary children's TV show of that period of time. And it was an extraordinarily unique show at the time. And it even still is today. It had an immense resonance. And what I have sort of percolated down to the primary resonance in the story is it's about uncelebrated heroism. How little today is done without the doer seeking acknowledgement, approval, and celebration from the public authorities and medal givers. This is a story of a selfless group of boys under their father's watchful eye that puts their lives at risk constantly, as do a huge number of people in the world. Rescue workers, the military do this every day. But these boys just disappear back into the shadows, not seeking celebration, not seeking acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And that had a huge resonance with me. Yeah. I pursued the opportunity to remake the Thunderbirds for 12 years. I had the great benefit of going and meeting with Jerry and Sylvia Anderson and asking their blessing. They were the original creators. And on getting their blessing, we were able to start the process of trying to make this a reality. We've been in production for over a year now. It's a very unique approach to children's television in that we're doing all the environments with miniatures, just as they did in the original 60s show, to try and give the children a textural, very real, very model-made look so that the kids can connect with it, aspire to do it, just like I did as a child. Yeah. Arguably, the DNA of Weta Workshop is the Thunderbirds, the inspiration that what you saw on telly, you could build yourself. And we're trying to put that back into our show to get kids away from the computers, starting to make models again, starting to create and invent again. And that's at the heart of what we're trying to do with Thunderbirds. And I'm very proud of where we're at thus far with our small team.
Now, I heard you had tremendous reception at Cannes Film Festival this spring on the Thunderbirds.
It was crazy. We took the show, our first finished episode, we showed it for the first time to anyone outside of our facilities, and it was to 450, I think about 450 of the world's international buyers and press. Now, naturally, they see a lot of stuff, and they naturally would be enthusiastic, but the reception from that crowd was mind-boggling. Cheering, clapping. Some people came up at the end with tears in their eyes. Oh. It was lovely. It was the best endorsement we could have got. And, you know, we still have to please the young kiddies. We can't make a show only for us as fans. We've got to make a show for a modern-day childhood audience. So we're still yet to see how the children of the world react to the show, but it was lovely to at least get it in front of these learned professionals and see the response.
Well, just coincidentally, the films of my work and the Woodstock bus were receiving 7 awards at Cannes Film Festival, 2 golds and 5 bronze at the same time, 2014, and I was really surprised at that.
Great. You know, we've been following your journey for over this year, too. It's with it all,
Well, I know we're about out of time. I just can't wait for the extended version DVD of Hobbit 3 to come out so I can line up all 6 movies and watch them back to back. And as I noted earlier, it might take a day or two to get through them all, but this is a marathon I will enjoy yearly for the rest of my years on this planet, because all of the details that you put in these, all the films, I'm able to see new things in them all the time. And I know you've seen them 20 times more than I have, but still, you know, it's amazing because of the quality of detail and the realism of the whole thing that it takes on another life all of its own.
Yes, do look out for the extended cut. Peter told me the other day that it's going to be the greatest one yet.
Hot diggity.
He's putting a huge amount of extra stuff in it. So
that's great.
I think it'll be very exciting.
Thank you.
It's lovely that it's brought so many people together around the world. It's endorsed the literature of Tolkien's writing to so many people that otherwise wouldn't know it and read it. Mm-hmm. There's obviously already a huge pool of readers of this incredible stories, but the films have inspired another generation to get out and read those beautiful books. And I guess at the end of 16 years and 6 movies, if nothing else, that's probably the most important thing that's come out of it all, is the impact that the films have had on the literature and the fact that Tolkien gave us something so special that now can be shared so globally with the viewers of the world.
Well, look, I hope to talk to you on the air again soon when the Thunderbirds are ready to launch, because we're really looking forward to that. Richard, thank you so much for taking the time. I don't know how busy you are. You're probably 5 times busier than I am, and I don't have time for hardly anything. Except watching Hobbit, The Hobbit.
Yep, very good.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening, and we'll be talking to you again, brother.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas to all of your listeners, Bob, and cheers to you.
Same to you, brother. We'll take our break here, and when we come back, Dr. Rick Straussman will tell us about DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, a new science of spiritual revelation in the Hebrew Bible.